key part of our culture is basically like being and having the willingness to have a growth mindset. Basically, like one of the things I look out for when I think about hiring and working with folks is that, hey, like, does this person, is this person willing to learn and like kind of to maybe push beyond their comfort zone a bit?
Welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Code podcast, where we interview entry-level to C-level executives about working in the Bitcoin industry. Learn about their interview process, what they do day-to-day at their Bitcoin job, and advice for current job seekers looking to work full-time in Bitcoin. Hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Code podcast. I'm your host, Eric Podwatchke. Today I'm joined by my friend Tony Kai, who is the CEO of Atomic Finance. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Excited to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So, you're a CEO of a Bitcoin company now, right? But before
yes,
we get into the Bitcoin side of things, I'm curious about your background. You know, where did you go to school? What did you study? What were you doing professionally before Bitcoin really started taking over your life?
Yeah, great question. So, Before Bitcoin, I was studying, basically, I was doing this double major program. Basically, I was studying finance and business, but also computer science. I guess a good tie-in with Bitcoin and crypto, I guess, in general. But yeah, I went to this school called University of Waterloo. It was about 60 miles or so from Toronto. This is college towns. And, you know, I ended up basically, like, being roommates with this guy who, spoiler alert, he ended up being my co-founder. But basically, in the 2017 bubble, there was a span of 3 weeks where this guy just, Matt, he couldn't stop talking about Bitcoin and crypto and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, first week, his pitch was, hey, there's this Bitcoin thing. It just went up from $1,000 to $7,000 in over a couple months. You know, you might want to check this out. And I was like, okay, I don't know about this thing. You know, it's like, I've heard it's been used in scams. I've heard that, you know, there's the Silk Road thing, which sounded a bit sketchy at the time. I was like, yeah, I don't know about this. So week two, he changed tactics on me. He was like, you know, you might want to get in this Bitcoin thing sooner rather than later, because there's going to be this fork. There's going to be this fork, this weird Segwit 2x thing that is going to happen. And so if you buy one Bitcoin now, you're actually going to get two Bitcoins, like, because of the fork afterwards. I was like, okay, that's interesting. But I was like, still kind of like, I don't know about it. So third week, his tactic was, hey, there's also this thing called Ethereum. And, you know, you can start using it to write these things called smart contracts. You can run decentralized apps on it, you know, decentralize everything. You know, you can build decentralized Uber, decentralized Airbnb. And being the naive 20-something-year-old college kid in computer science I was at the time, I was like, okay, that's actually kind of interesting. So that's kind of how I finally kind of got into the crypto, I guess generally crypto space at the time. And I would call myself a shitcoiner turned Bitcoiner. And basically, fast forward a couple of years, by that point, I had aped into numerous shit coins, got wrecked, had worked at a traditional finance insurance company also, and then also ended up working at a Ethereum company called Consensus. And basically, like, at that point, we even started kind of playing around, maybe working on a DeFi, started working on a DeFi project of our own. In our defense, kind of, it had Bitcoin twist to it, but all in all, it was a bit shitcoiny. It was cross-chain, there was a lot of e-smart contracts involved. And didn't really have kind of like a come to Bitcoin moment until I would say the summer of 2020, which was actually when all the ETH DeFi hype was, the DeFi summer. Basically the summer where, like, if you had anything to do with ETH DeFi, you got to launch a token, you got to set up yield farming, you got to get as much liquidity into the platform as possible and hype it up, hype the token up and all that kind of stuff. That was really the only way to stay in the game. And kind of like, us being this kind of ETH DeFi project at the time, we didn't feel comfortable with that. I guess we had enough morals and principles at that point to understand, hey, yeah, it doesn't sound right to just kind of print tokens out of thin air. You know, is there anything that screams unsound money as much as, you know, the rampant printing of tokens, these pump and dump things going on? And so right around that time, I also started reading a book that I think a lot of us have read in the Bitcoin space, The Bitcoin Standard. And that was kind of when I really finally started understanding money and kind of how I shouldn't just be treating Bitcoin as this kind of like stock-like investment where, hey, I'm just waiting for this thing to go up, maybe cash out at some point. Because that was what I was thinking Bitcoin of, like up until that point. But I was like, okay, maybe this is something fundamentally different. Maybe this is a new monetary system, a more sound money where folks can actually have full transparency, where everything's verifiable, where, you know, a money that we can truly control without a bank or custodian. And of course, like being completely leaderless, having a hard supply cap, that was also what made it stand out amongst all the other kind of cryptos going on. And so at that moment, I remember that moment really vividly. I was kind of like sitting in my chair in my office, like of our little DeFi project there. I was like staring at the ceiling. I was like, holy crap, like, what have we been doing? Like, what the hell are we doing the past few months, like building on ETH, this cross-chain thing? If we're going to build Bitcoin financial tools, we've got to build it on Bitcoin. And, you know, if we're going to build non-custodial sound finance on sound money, well, we got to build it on the soundest money out there, right? Which is Bitcoin. Yeah. And so that's kind of how, you know, Atomic Finance, we became a Bitcoin-only company and kind of led to, I guess, the current incarnation of what we ended up building. So, yeah, that's kind of like my whole journey into Bitcoin.
Love it, yeah. And so coming right out of school, you wanted to work in the broader crypto industry. Was there anything that wanted you to like, what pushed you towards that industry?
I think like, you know, being the naive 20-something-year-old kid out of college, I was like, you know, this thing's really... like this, the crypto space, it's really moving. It's really moving quick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I obviously, like at that point, I was like, holy crap, like a lot of people have made just a lot of money, like in a short amount of time, like working in this space, building things in this space. That was honestly, if I'm being honest, what drew me in. I was like, yeah maybe I can do that. You know, maybe I can kind of just spin something up quick. Maybe like launch a token, maybe get, you know, kind of like build up my wealth quick and stuff like that. And that was honestly the what drew me in, if I'm being honest, before the Bitcoin standard, before understanding all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I mean, me too. I mean, I got into it because I wanted to get rich and I wasn't going to launch a DeFi token, but I was going to buy all these shit coins and try to make a bunch of money. Didn't end up happening, but that's usually the journey I feel like people get into when they come into the crypto space for the first time. I'm also curious now, I know you mentioned the Bitcoin standard. Was there an aha moment when you were in crypto and you're like, we need to shift to Bitcoin? And when did you become more of a Bitcoin only company?
Yeah, I think the aha moment was, so when I was reading that the Bitcoin standard, I literally finished that book. That was kind of when it clicked. I would say another moment that kind of also contributed to it was, I was reading another book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's a fairly famous book in the realm of leadership and like these kinds of things. But one of the kind of key insights I took away from that book was that, hey, like anything you build and do as a company should be a reflection of your why in terms of like what your mission is as a company. And you really got to understand what your why is and make sure that everything you do as a company, like reflects that. And kind of like, at that point, I was like, you know, I'm in this not to necessarily, especially after reading the Bitcoin standard, I was like, I'm not in this to get rich quick. I'm in this to build a better financial layer on top of the soundest money possible. I want to build a company that's not just here for the next 2 or 3 years and do a pump and dump token. I want to build a company that's here for the next 5, 10, 20 years, you know. And to do that, I think the way to do that is to build that on the soundest foundation possible, which is Bitcoin. And so I think the combination of those two books and those two, like the insight from Start With Why combined with, you know, all the stuff I learned about what makes Bitcoin unique in the Bitcoin standard was what ultimately drove me to kind of, hey, tell the team, hey, you know, I think we've been on the wrong path here and we should consider just focusing on Bitcoin and building, you know, a company that lasts 20, 30 years rather than, you know, on a shaky foundation, which is Ethereum, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on there. What year did you guys transition to be Bitcoin only? 2020, 2021?
This was 2020, like late 2020.
Okay.
When around the time when the DeFi summer thing was taking off.
Yeah, that's so funny because I got in like 2017 to the space, and then over the next 3-4 years, you saw all these companies taking the same playbook that you did, realizing that Bitcoin's really the only solid foundation to build upon, and changing their companies to be Bitcoin only. So I love that journey there. And I also think a lot of this audience that listens to this show, they may be looking to work in Bitcoin. They also might be looking to start a company in the space. There's a lot of opportunities out there right now. So I'm curious about the background story to founding Atomic Finance. Can you just walk me through the early days?
Yeah. So it was an interesting kind of journey. Like one of the things that to kind of illustrate what Atomic Finance is now, and then I'll take a step back and talk about kind of the journey. So Atomic Finance, what we're doing is we're building a mobile app where Bitcoiners can earn a return on their Bitcoin while holding on to their keys. We never take custody. There's no BS rehypothecation that we saw last year, and users have full transparency all the way through. But before kind of diving further into like what that necessarily, like how that's possible and all that kind of stuff, let's take a step back. What my journey is, and how do we get to that? Well, basically, like our longer term vision here is really that we want to get Atomic Finance to a point where it's a one-stop shop for non-custodial sound finance tools for Bitcoiners around the world, and building sound finance for sound money, financial tools that are self-sovereign, transparent, and as verifiable as Bitcoin itself. Whether that's kind of earning a return, taking out a loan, or hedging price downside, do all of that while you hold onto your keys and everything is still fully transparent. You have private and secure control over what happens with your own Bitcoin. The reason why that vision was compelling to us was that, after being in the Bitcoin space for a bit, one of the things that kind of immediately became clear to me was that, hey, the current version of Bitcoin finance tools, they kind of suck, like a lot, And I think last year made that abundantly clear for a lot of Bitcoiners. But, I think the thing that a lot of Bitcoiners learn after being in space for a bit is that if you want to do anything beyond just self-custodying your coins, say you're interested in earning a small yield or you want to take out a loan, you got to hand over custody, right? To a BlockFi, to a Celsius. And the moment you give them custody of your coins, the moment you quote unquote lend to them, your Bitcoin just becomes a number on a screen. You no longer own that Bitcoin. You don't have any control at that point over what they do with it. And it's just a promise. It's just an IOU to pay you back, right? And the moment you do that, there's counterparty risk. There's layers and layers of unknown counterparty risk. And there's the possibility to be rugged. It's a complete black box as to what they do, what they go and do with your Bitcoin after that, right? And of course, like that was, we still don't know what exactly Celsius and BlockFi might have done with people's Bitcoin. And basically, it's just a black box, right? We don't know how healthy their balance sheet is. We don't know what the risks is that they're taking with your coins, whether they're using that to lend to somebody or to participate in Terra Luna. We don't know. The big question in our minds was like, okay, well, everything seems super opaque. How can we improve on this? How can we make it so that people are, no longer in the dark about their Bitcoin finances? How can we make it so that, Bitcoin finance is a place where people are unruggable, right? Like, and it's not just a carbon copy of the opaque and this shady black box that traditional finances looks like. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what got us working on a vision of Atomic Finance, this idea of a one-stop shop for non-custodial self-sovereign financial tools. And the first of those products that we decided to work on is kind of a simple solution for long-term Bitcoin holders to be able to earn a return on a portion of their Bitcoin stack without giving custody to a third party. And all that is kind of made possible with some cool technical innovations called DLCs, and also kind of a passive cover call strategy in terms of how that works. DLCs, on a high level, they're a way to be able to encode financial contracts natively on the Bitcoin chain without anyone needing to take custody. So whether that's, you know, a simple bet or like an options contract or a futures contract, it's a way to be able to do that non-custodially on chain. And with cover calls, basically like on Atomic Finance, you're able to earn a return by selling a call option. It's not completely risk-free. There's a possibility of losing some upside if Bitcoin rips up in a short period of time. But the difference from BlockFi or Celsius is that you're not risking your whole stack to collect a couple percentage points. With a cover call, you know, there's no possibility where there's no leverage, there's no margin call, and basically like you either end up with more Bitcoin at the end of the day, or you're up in USD terms in your investment. There's no outcome where you don't add to your stack or get more USD. And so, but earlier on when we kind of like started doing our user research and learning from Bitcoiners about kind of like, you know, what's the best product to build, we heard from folks, okay, well, even though it sounds kind of conservative, it still sounds a bit like trading. And so I'm not sure if I have the temperament or the time to stare at monitors all day and trade and do these kinds of things. And so kind of like that's what led to the next iteration where, hey, how can we make this experience as passive as possible? How can we build an experience where folks can get started earning a return, a passive return on their Bitcoin without needing to know the ins and outs of trading or to keep tabs on the market all day? And so that's kind of what led to us building a passive cover call strategy using math and statistics, basically a method called backtesting where you actually look at market data going all the way back to 2011, 2012, and using that data, basically building a passive strategy for folks to enter cover calls and make that whole process automated. So we rolled that product out a couple months ago, the strategy out a couple months ago, grew it from kind of couple Bitcoin invested on the platform to now over almost 40 Bitcoin invested. And so still early days, still a lot of work ahead, and still a lot of work ahead to build out to that longer term vision of a one-stop shop. But you know, we're just getting started with this kind of early on passive cover call strategy. And so excited for what's ahead.
Hey guys, real quick, as a Bitcoin-focused recruiting firm, our goal at Bitcoin Talent Co. is to bring as many professionals into the Bitcoin industry as possible. Since we don't run ads, our one ask is to rate, review, and share this podcast with friends and family so more people can find this show. Thanks, and now back to the interview.
I think I want to highlight as well why there is a need for your product in the market right now through a personal story. So in late 2020 or so, I was on BlockFi, and I actually took out a loan against my Bitcoin because I saw the price of Bitcoin going up, and I was like, oh, this thing's going to moon even more. Might as well take some extra cash out now, get a loan, buy more Bitcoin, and then once the price of Bitcoin goes all the way to the top, maybe I'll sell a little, close up the loan, make a ton of Bitcoin profit, and I'd be off to the races, and I'll be rich then. But the plebs spoke up about it, not directly to me, but they were all over Bitcoin Twitter. People were like, do not use this service because they do what's called rehypothecation. So like you highlighted before, they take your Bitcoin that you deposit in there in the loan. It's not just sitting there, right? They're going to use it for whatever business needs they have. And so the Bitcoin community showed me the risk involved with that. So I immediately shut down the loan, just got my money out, which was great. And what happened was maybe a year or two later, the entire company collapsed. And so now all those people that had loans out, right? Your Bitcoin may or may not be gone. It has to go through years worth of legal process, and you might get it back, you might not, just depending on their terms and conditions. So there needs to be a solution such as yours. You can deposit your Bitcoin, earn a little extra on it, but at the same time, it's not, that counterparty risk is so much more reduced where you'd be more comfortable to do so. I just wanted to highlight that. I think it's really great what you guys are building here. So I want to go more into now the first product you guys have. So I just got onboarded, I think, a day or two ago on the Atomic Finance app. I really like it. I want to, let's explore this first covered call strategy. maybe a highlight of like what is that? What are covered calls? And then what's the product you guys are offering right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in essence, covered calls, they're a very kind of conservative options strategy where you're selling a call option on the Bitcoin or on portion of your stack that you mm-hmm. own. And basically, like what that is that basically like you're selling a call option where you're giving someone else or your counterparty the ability to buy your Bitcoin at a predetermined price. So say like Bitcoin's price is 30,000 right now. I'm going to sell a call option where basically like where with a strike price of 35,000. And so that means mm-hmm. that basically if between now and the expiration of the contract, so say now and a week from now, if Bitcoin's price goes above 35,000, then I still have to basically give up that upside, give up any upside above 35,000. Mm-hmm. And I have to kind of lose that upside. And so basically like, but in return for that, I get a return. I get a premium in Bitcoin that I can use as a kind of to add to my stack, basically. Mm-hmm. And so that's essentially what a covered call is. And so in Bitcoin, like to earn a return, it's important to emphasize that there's no free lunch, right? There's no risk-free rate of return in Bitcoin. There's no lender of last resort. And so there's always the need to take a bit of risk in terms of earning a return on your Bitcoin. But the thing is, unlike BlockFi, where basically, or Celsius, where the risk is completely unknown. It's a black box. You don't know what risks they're taking, what they're doing with your coins, what the risk of the people that they're lending to are, and whether or not they mm-hmm. can pay back the loan to BlockFi. Here, you know exactly what the risk is that you're taking is. It's verifiable price risk, and basically, like we try to help you manage that risk by making it into a passive strategy where it's fully automated in terms of like when it makes sense to sell a cover call, and basically like make that process as seamless and kind of automated as possible.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah. And so right now you just have the one covered call strategy, pretty low risk mm-hmm. in relative terms. What are you guys looking forward to in the future? What types of offerings you guys can have?
Yeah, I think like there's tons of different possibilities that could be interesting. I think that like while we're in a bull market, for folks who are prudent, it could be interesting for us to build out a hedging strategy where folks can actually hedge part of their price downside if they think, okay, we're a bit bubbly right now, like and basically want to kind of hedge part of my risk so that I'm not holding the bag all the way down. That's an opportunity for us to kind of build out potential hedging strategies in the future. Mm-hmm. There's other kind of strategies that can be more, maybe speculative in nature, maybe for folks who do want to bet on a big price rise in a short amount of time. That would probably be a long call strategy, for example. So there's mm-hmm. definitely lots of different kind of possibilities that we can build out. And beyond just these kinds of strategies and options-based strategies, there's additional things further down in the road, that can be enabled by things like DLCs, stable sats, which is kind of this idea of like sure. basically using a DLC to represent a stable coin that's pegged to the US dollar. Mm-hmm. So that's lots of different opportunities and things that can be built out natively on Bitcoin. And this kind of cover call strategy is just the first step.
Got it. Okay. Last thing I want to touch upon before we jump into more of the job side of thing and the company itself. What about your non-custodial wallet? Why is that important mm-hmm. in this process here? And I guess, how does that lessen counterparty risk? And
I think like for us, people should always have the optionality to do things in a non-custodial way. The worry that I sometimes have longer term for Bitcoin is that what if if there's not a ton of innovation in terms of like non-custodial tools and enabling folks to do things non-custodially, then everything beyond maybe basic kind of transactions are going to be just done on a custodial layer on top of Bitcoin. Yeah.
You kind of see that happening, and, honestly.
Yeah, and basically, like, you know, that starts to move us closer to what potentially happened, or what happened in the past with gold, right? Basically, people found it hard to do things besides storing it under your mattress. They found it hard to transact with gold because, you know, it's not very divisible and portable. They found it hard to obviously do anything, any financial instruments with gold as well. And so basically what ended up happening was you just take your gold, you give it to the bank, they give you a piece of paper for it, and then you can kind of use that to do things. That's kind of, you know, assuming nothing changes in the Bitcoin's, in terms of Bitcoin innovation and the Bitcoin stack, that can also be what I see happening with Bitcoin. And so basically, like, that's why I think it's important for companies like ourselves to continue innovating and building out, you know, tools where folks are able to do things in a non-custodial way, whether it's a wallet and just holding your Bitcoin, to, you know, more advanced financial tools and, you know, doing more with your Bitcoin besides just holding it. I think that that's why kind of building things out, building non-custodial tools, non-custodial wallets, non-custodial financial tools is super crucial for us in the long run, and to give Bitcoiners the optionality to do things without having to trust a custodial layer.
Yeah, and to highlight too, like, there is a scenario, speaking of counterparty risk, if you're using your covered call options, right, in your app, there's a scenario where you guys can go out of business, and if you guys were custodial, that Bitcoin probably will be gone for the user. So what's so cool about non-custodial is even if you guys went into business 10 years from now, the user can go and take that wallet, create a new wallet from seeds, and just get that money back, essentially. It's in their possession. That's the key point, too. And I really like how you 100%. Can track, like, the whenever you can track it on the blockchain, right? The Bitcoin blockchain, every transaction. So you know that Tony and his team is not doing anything shady with your money. That's, I think, is a very big innovation here compared to traditional finance, where it's just a black box, like you said before. So, yeah, I love you guys are building. Love to see how it's progressing here. So I want to talk now more about the company itself. How many current employees do you guys have?
We currently have a full-time staff of just 3 people. So myself, who's the CEO, my co-founder slash CTO, and then our product designer. And then we also work with a number of advisors and part-time contractors as well.
Yeah.
But full-time staff, just the 3 of us.
Got it. And I want to dive more into the contractor aspect, because our thesis at Bitcoin Talent Co. is that a lot of Bitcoin companies operate as startups, right? And it's financially beneficial to, at least in the beginning, hire out more contractors with a handful of founders. Like, sounds exactly like the playbook you guys are running. What's the benefits of using contractors compared to hiring a team of full-time employees right off the bat?
From an employer standpoint, I think, like, being able to bring on board like a contractor gives us flexibility, right? In terms of not needing to commit necessarily like a very kind of full-on employment agreement and all the kind of, you know, potential benefits and stuff like that that comes along with kind of a full-time employee compensation package and stuff like that. And so it just gives us flexibility. From an employee standpoint, for example, you know, one of the contractors we work with, he does part-time writing, you know, long-form content for us. And basically, like, for him, it gives him flexibility as well, because he's not yet fully kind of like just 100% working in the Bitcoin space just yet. He still has a kind of a fiat job, I guess, in that sense. And so basically this gives him the flexibility to be able to contribute to Bitcoin and work in the Bitcoin space and obviously earn something from that without needing to dive in 100% into the Bitcoin space just yet. So basically, like, I think it gives both the employee and the employer a good amount of flexibility.
Yeah, and for those listening right now, I have so many people in my DMs asking, how can I get a job within a Bitcoin company? It's really about getting your foot in the door. And I think the contractor option, like you just said, you can write Bitcoin content part-time. Say you worked for Atomic Finance as a contractor, you get your foot in the door in the industry. And then from there, it's like exponentially easier to get a job at another Bitcoin company, a full-time role. So anyone listening right now, highly suggest looking into some part-time work in the Bitcoin space. I know these Bitcoin companies, they need it. They need people to help, and they want to hire Bitcoiners too that actually understand what they're writing about or what they're building or anything they're doing in a work function. So I think the contractor roles are going to be more popular over time. I'd love to see you guys are utilizing it as well. Talk to me about your company culture too. So I guess essentially starting as more of a crypto company and then transitioning to a Bitcoin company, how have you guys seen the culture evolve?
Yeah, I think I think the early on as like a crypto company, like I think like basically, well, first of all, like that part of that transition was just getting everyone to read the Bitcoin standard and to understand, okay, what sets Bitcoin apart from the other crypto assets. And I think like basically like, so obviously like kind of on the Atomic team, everyone is pretty bought in to the vision of Bitcoin being larger than it is today, and basically like, you know, taking over larger and larger portion of the global economy and the global financial system, potentially being a reserve asset in the future. I think like for us, like a key part of our culture is basically like being and having the willingness to have a growth mindset. Basically like one of the things I look out for when I think about hiring and working with folks is that, hey, like, is this person willing to learn and like kind of to maybe push beyond their comfort zone a bit? You know, one of the red flags that I look for is like, okay, maybe if a person comes into, you know, our first interview and it's like, they start making clear, okay, oh yeah, that's, I don't do that, that's not something I do, or just being questioning their like the lines of work like from day one. Basically, that's a bit of a red flag to me, because basically in a startup, it's just such a small team that you do have to put on multiple hats. And so basically, like from a startup perspective, we look for folks who have a growth mindset, are willing to learn and push beyond their comfort zone, and basically like, you know, keep enhancing and growing their knowledge sets to basically match what they need to do and how best to kind of contribute to our company.
Sure. And when you're considering candidates to hire, how important is it that they understand at least the fundamentals of Bitcoin? Do they do they need to know the distinction between crypto and Bitcoin? Like, what level are you assessing that, their knowledge?
Yeah, I think like it's a very role specific thing in terms of that that determination. Our view is that for a marketer or for a content writer, yeah, I think it's probably makes sense to optimize for someone who has a good and deep understanding of the Bitcoin ethos and you know, the differences between Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, how Bitcoin is going to continue to evolve and grow, and why it's important as money. But like basically, say if I was hiring for an engineering position, well then I might have a slightly different viewpoint in that it might be best for us as a company to optimize for the best talent in terms of, okay, like where can we find a 10x engineer? And then we're happy to do the legwork in terms of orange pulling them, right? Yeah. And basically, because it's a lot, I think I've been in the Bitcoin space for a long enough period of time such that I feel somewhat decent about my orange pulling abilities, I guess. I feel better about my orange pulling abilities than turning a 2x engineer to a 10x engineer. I think that's harder to do. So basically, but for a marketing role or for a growth role, I think that there does need to be in some buy-in and understanding of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ethos.
Yeah. To sum it up, kind of sounds like non-technical roles, Bitcoin knowledge is more preferred. not our technical roles, then they don't need to know as much, and you guys will help orient them along the way.
Exactly.
So that's exactly our thesis too at Bitcoin Talent Co. The reality is a lot of the talent sits outside the Bitcoin industry. Most talented engineers, those 10x engineers, they don't know too much about Bitcoin. So it's a matter of let's bring them in first, right? Yeah. At least show them the value prop of Bitcoin and the opportunity that's there. And then, yeah, let's educate them too along the way. 100%. Yeah, so I love that. What about the future here? So you guys are on a pretty good growth path, I would say, over the last 6 months, a year or so. What roles will you be hiring for in the future?
Yeah. So I think, like, as we grow and as we kind of continue to evolve, there's going to be lots of kind of interesting roles that we're going to need to bring on board and augment the team. Number one is, of course, we're a Bitcoin tech company. And so engineers, Bitcoin engineers, front-end engineers, you know, the whole gamut in terms of, like, helping us with on the technical side of things. Beyond that, we're also going to be looking for marketers and growth leads or growth person that can help us kind of, like, continue our growth trajectory and help us kind of continue to grow the user base and whatnot. Also, we place a high value on product design and making our product as simple to use as and intuitive as possible. And so I can imagine bringing on board a product designer in the not too distant future and continue to grow our product and design team. I think, and beyond that, of course, like one of the core components of our team is also the quantitative trading aspect in terms of how to design this passive strategy for covered calls and other strategies moving forward. And so that's also kind of a role that right now we have as a part-time and outsourced role, but we could bring that in-house moving forward and have that in-house capability moving forward.
Got it, okay. And when you interview people, is there like a go-to question, a typical question you ask that vets if someone, I guess, understands Bitcoin, is a culture fit, and would be a good person for your team?
One of the questions that I like the most, or a few questions that I like the most, is just what have you learned in a previous role that really kind of surprised you? One of the things that I really like is like folks who have that growth mindset and are willing constantly learning and kind of growing their skill set and their expertise. And basically, like, I really like to kind of ask questions to really make sure that that's that, like, folks we bring on have that kind of mindset. And, you know, I'll ask them things like, oh, what books have you read recently? What were some key insights that you gained from those books? Or maybe if they don't learn via books usually, then maybe I ask them about, you know, okay, like, just generally what they've learned, you know, that's related to their kind of line of work. Those are the key questions that I like to ask, generally speaking, like, just to get a gauge for, hey, does this person have that growth mindset, that go-go motor, and willing to put in the work and also willing to put in the time to learn new skill sets, because we're a startup, you know, things are dynamic, things are going to change. Folks need to put on multiple hats. And so that's a key kind of component of that culture fit that I look for when I'm hiring for someone.
Yeah, I love it. And someone listening right now, I'm gonna take this both ways. We're gonna do technical and non-technical. So what's a piece of advice you give someone listening right now? They're a technical engineer working outside the industry, but they maybe want to come work for a Bitcoin finance company such as yours. What's a piece of advice for them that they could start doing right now to really beef up their resume and be attractive as a candidate?
I think, like, for us, if you're interested working in a Bitcoin startup, just come in with the expectation of having to wear multiple hats, right? Be an optimistic doer, like I said, like to say. Like, basically, we'll be willing to put in the hard work. Even if you're less experienced in something, you know, be someone who's willing to put in the time to learn and grow. and mm-hmm. not someone who's setting hard boundaries of, oh yeah, I haven't done that before. That's not my expertise. That's not my experience. So, that's not something I'm interested in doing. Like, basically be that optimistic doer who's willing to take on new challenges. I think that's the best piece of advice that I can give to someone who's interested in working for like Bitcoin startups.
Yeah. And how would they exemplify that, you think?
I think like the key is to expose yourself to new kind of sources of information. So whether that's mm-hmm. like reading, whether that's kind of just looking at what's happening, what are new things happening in the Bitcoin space? Basically exposing yourself to new sources of information and continue your path of growing, like on top of what you're doing at in your day job and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like basically put in that time and your growth and your learning is gonna compound a lot faster. And basically like when you come into an interview process, like your interviewer, whoever's interviewing you can see that pretty quickly in terms of like, okay, how much of a growth mindset this person has, what do they do to actually exemplify that growth mindset? I think, I think that's really the best way to get started on that.
So true. And then same question for non-technical roles too. Would you have the same answer? Or is there another piece of advice to give to them to really start preparing to get a job in the industry within like this year or so?
Same piece of advice, I think. Like basically like technical, like for technical folks, like obviously like follow the right people on the Bitcoin technical space, learn what's happening, what the latest things are happening there. And the non-technical side of things, I think similar idea, but you know, on non-technical kind of topics, I guess. Yeah,
definitely. Cool. As we wrap this up here, I'm curious, Tony, so if it wasn't for Bitcoin, I guess crypto too, what do you think you'd be doing professionally right now? Like, what else are your interests outside of that?
That's a very good question. I think as a kid, there were a few different kind of careers that I was like interested in. I'm a big nerd for planes and aviation. And okay. I actually like ended up getting a private pilot's license just before I started university. And so basically, I think that could have been a potential career path, like being a pilot and doing that kind of stuff. So something very different from Bitcoin. But beyond that, I think like, being just like a cog in the wheel, if I didn't kind of like get exposed to startup culture, my co-founder who was my roommate, I think I would be a cog in the wheel. Basically like, because growing up, I was always taught, hey, like, you know, just get your education, just like go into a field that's pretty high paying and just, you know,
Yeah,
and I guess growing up in an Asian household, that was kind of like what I was taught. And, you know, had I not been exposed to my co-founder, who, to be honest, might have been the most important person in my life in terms of like, you know, putting me on a trajectory of even considering starting a startup, even, you know, considering kind of obviously getting into the crypto/Bitcoin space. I think I would have been on a very different trajectory in terms of just being a cog in the wheel, maybe some big tech company, that kind of thing. I think like very grateful. That's why I'm very grateful to him and other Bitcoiners that I've met over the years in terms of like, you know, having an even deeper buy-in into Bitcoin, believing in Bitcoin as a long-term asset that's here to stay. And being willing to dedicate my career to, building on top of Bitcoin, hopefully growing Bitcoin and the use cases that folks can do on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think the point you really hit on is the idea of like you're most like the five most people you hang around with day to day. And so if you're hanging around with people that have jobs in corporations and that's all they really do, they could do their 9 to 5, come home, work out, maybe go to bed, do it again. And that's just their life. You won't really get exposed to the other side of things. And so hanging out with Bitcoiners and hanging out with other entrepreneurs, you start to change your mindset too. and you expose yourself to different ways of life, different ways of work as well. And I absolutely love that you kind of made that shift. That's a big shift to do. I guess last question before we wrap this up, what did your parents think of it? Was it something to tell them that you're just going to throw away this career that's nice and safe?
Yeah, I mean, it was, let's just say there were some interesting, somewhat heated conversations, but
sure.
I'm very grateful to them being open to understand more about, hey, what the heck this Bitcoin thing is and stuff like that. And I think it was my dad who like was more open to the idea, and like he learned, he likes tech as well. So he like, you know, started learning about it, sort of like, okay, this, maybe there's something here, you know, maybe this is not a complete scam or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I think with his, like, you need to pull in one of the parents in. And then basically if you convince one of them, then they're more likely to be able to convince the other one. And so that was what ultimately helped, I think, me get both of them on board and on side with what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I struggled with something similar when I made the full leap into Bitcoin. So love to hear that I'm not alone. And you know, we both made it out on the other side. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Love what you guys are building. Love meeting you guys in Miami too, by the way, for the first time.
Absolutely.
Really looking forward to your future success here. So anyone listening that's maybe looking to work for Atomic in the future, want to get in touch with you, or even just wants to download the app, how can they do all that?
Yeah. So if what I described sounds interesting, and you know, you want to kind of like level up in terms of trying to use something beyond just holding your Bitcoin in cold storage, and basically starting to kind of participate in the greater kind of Bitcoin financial system. I encourage you to give Atomic Finance a try. Hit up atomic.finance, that's our URL, and basically like just put a small portion of your stack that you feel comfortable using and learning with, you know. And basically that's kind of how a lot of us got into the Bitcoin space in the first place. We just put, you know, $100 in or $200 in, enough to be, you know, a little bit dangerous, but enough to also push yourself to learn more about what's going on here and what have you. So try Atomic Finance out with small 1%, 0.1% of your stack, and just see how it goes, you know, and take a step further into being a true Bitcoin native, participating in the wider Bitcoin ecosystem. And beyond that, yeah, we'd love to connect with you guys on Twitter. Our company Twitter account is at Atomic Finance. And my personal Twitter account is at Tony, T-O-N-Y, Kai, C-A-I, underscore. We'd love to connect with you guys there, and hope to hang out with you guys on Twitter.
Yeah, I love the content you've been putting out more recently. I feel like you're really beefing it up, providing a lot of value too. So go follow Tony and the Atomic team.
That's the goal.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Looking forward to, you know, just keep earning a little extra yield into the future here as I explore the app. You guys come up with new offerings. So, yeah, thanks for your time again, and I'll talk to you.
Thanks, Eric.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening, and I really hope you found value in this podcast. If you're a job seeker looking to work for a Bitcoin company, or you're a part of a Bitcoin company and need help with finding talent for your team, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co and get in touch with our team. Thanks, until next time.